Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thank you for checking in today. When you have a chance, do me a favor. Regular listeners know the drill. Check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2025 Best Buy picks. Plus, go to the blog. Fun stuff at the blog. I wrote a piece, I think I talked about this last week, about trim levels. It's not just about trim levels. It's about the industry movement away from base trim levels. So even if manufacturers aren't exactly raising prices, they are totally raising prices. All right, in studio, because Jill is doing Rebel training somewhere.
Whatever that means.
Yes, whatever that means. Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed. Paul, it's been a long time.
Yes, it has been.
Thank you. And you're a busy man. We know this because you were in the middle of a meeting up until a minute ago.
Yes, I was in a Zoom call, and then I'm like, I got to go because Tom's here.
Tom showed up. Tom would have been here 5 minutes earlier, but the printer ran out of paper.
Oh.
And as we know, I'm useless without my notes.
And that's a five-minute fix, I guess.
You know why? There's a story here. No one wants to hear this story, but I'm going to vent just a little bit.
Okay.
So my kid moved back home.
Yes.
That's great. She finished school. She got a job. It's in the area. All that's great. And if this job is something she wants to
pursue,
yeah, then she will look for a house.
Yes.
In the area, or a townhome, or whatever. But in the meantime, our front room, that's a very Chicago thing, a front room, it's really our dining room, is where the printer is at.
Okay.
And in front of the printer is everything dog. My daughter adopted a dog right before she moved back home.
Okay.
Charming little beast.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've lost a chunk of the house.
Ah.
And including the printer. And I had to like excavate my way to the printer.
Okay.
And then to the paper.
All right.
And then I couldn't sit down because there was stuff on the chair.
Well, okay. I can see the 5 minutes now.
Yeah. I need to save all this for my therapist, I think. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am well. Tell us a little bit about what you do for people who forgot.
I'm a member of the Sons of Speed, together with Brendan. We do car reviews, videos, and we write for a magazine as well as for the internet.
Yeah. You guys do a lot of great stuff. You do a lot of great videos. And we're going to talk about one of your videos later in the show.
Okay.
Plus, you've got another one coming up soon.
Yes, another one is uploading as we speak.
And that's a vehicle I really want to know about.
Okay.
So we'll talk about both of those. A lot of news in the industry these days. Later on in the show, if we have time, I want to talk about the Cadillac Vistiq.
Okay.
I don't think it's Vistiq. I think it's Vistiq.
I actually could not answer that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone can.
Okay.
But I think it's Celestiq and not Celestiq and Optiq and not Optiq and whatever.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the Optiq, not the Vistiq. See, this
the Optiq. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The Optiq.
Yeah,
the smaller,
I drove that at the rally.
The smaller,
yeah,
less expensive vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a V version of that coming. We'll get to that in a minute.
And it needs it.
But we need to, does it?
Yeah.
Okay. We need to talk about the strangest thing that happened in the industry, and that was Ram.
Oh,
Ram,
yeah.
Their nice 1500 pickup, which, yes, has been a nice pickup for a very long time, redesigned last year without
a V8.
Without a V8, without the Hemi V8. And here's the thing about that. Years and years and years ago, Ford made the Ecotec 3.5-liter twin-turbo V6.
EcoBoost. Yeah,
EcoBoost,
yeah.
Thank you. Ecotec is, wow, that's weird. That's an old GM thing. I think that was in the old Saabs. Anyway, my bad. The EcoBoost engine. But people love that engine. And I think it's the most popular engine in that vehicle right now. Actually, there's a smaller, a 2.7-liter one now.
Yeah.
EcoBoost engine that I think is the most popular engine there. But Ford did keep the V8 available.
Yes.
And that's not what happened here.
Correct.
Ram went to a new engine, the Hurricane 3-liter inline six. And these are some potent little engines.
Yeah, it is.
Twin turbo. The base engine's 420 horsepower. The big dog is 540 horsepower. And they're more efficient. So you think people would be happy with these?
Nope.
Nope. And at first, like, Ram sales really slid when they went to the new version, and two things happened. One, the old Classic. They sold the version called the Classic, which was literally the last generation of the vehicle,
yeah,
available in a few models. And I think that really helped people make payments that couldn't
Yeah, because it was very inexpensive.
It was much less expensive. So you lost that version for whatever that was worth, 20% of sales, 10%. But they lost that version, and then they lost the V8.
Yes.
And that turned out to be a problem.
That was a big problem. And they even admitted that it was a mistake.
And it makes me a little sad that we can't make progress here. But on the other hand, people want the V8. But
money talks, Tom, money talks.
Money talks. And the way they've got this structured now, and I wrote this down, and there's way too many notes here to make this make sense. But if you, there are three models, the Tradesman, the Express, and the Bighorn Longhorn that still come with the old V6.
Okay.
The e-torque mild hybrid version of that. And then there's the Warlock, the Laramie, the Rebel. That would come with the base or the lower power Hurricane inline six. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the Limited and the Longhorn, which come with the high output version. Four, I guess this is where they're going to start. The Warlock, the Laramie, and the Rebel. Or no, the Rebel comes later. It's a $1,295 option to go to the heavy engine.
Yes.
So you're paying $1,300 for less power, worse fuel economy.
And they'll probably sell them all.
Probably.
Yeah.
This might...
Pickup truck owners want the V8. Period.
I guess so.
That's it. Period.
I guess so. Chevy and GMC actually sell a turbocharged four-cylinder model that we haven't heard about since launch. Mm-hmm. Basically. You know what that is? That's the engine that's in the Colorado and the Canyon.
Okay.
It's that engine. It's actually fine.
Yeah. I remember reading that in one of the editions, I can't remember which one, it's going to, the V8 Hemi is going to be a no-cost option.
That is probably true for the high output version. So the Limited and the Longhorn.
Those
higher trim levels, it'll probably be a no charge thing. And it looks like it's not going to be available in the Tungsten.
Okay.
Where they want to just keep the high output Hurricane engine. So that's the story. And then there are some prices I've seen, and I don't know if they're reliable, for going to the V8 from the base versions, the Tradesman, the Express, and the Bighorn Longhorn. It's like $2,700.
Okay.
But I suppose that's roughly what it costs to go to the Hurricane engine. So
probably.
So there you have it. Really weird thing to do. And it's funny how fast Ram, you remember 2-3 years ago, Ram was outselling Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a cap in the feather of the Ram marketing folks. And part of that was, we talked about the Ram Classic, the old version. And part of that was that Rams are really good.
Yeah.
And then Brandon. Your partner, Brendan,
he bought one, yeah.
Yeah, and he got a Limited, I think.
Yes, he's got the high output engine, yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's sort of a testament to the fact that people can use them.
Yeah.
If you have the parking space at both ends.
Correct. And then, of course, there is now speculation on what's going to happen if they're going to bring out a TRX version.
Right. The TRX was the crazy off-road
Off-road, super high horsepower, like 707 horsepower.
Something like that, yeah. It was a 6.2... Supercharged.
It was. And people were proud of the fact that it was getting like 8 miles to the gallon. Like,
and that was replaced by the RHO, the RHO.
Okay.
Which is more or less that with the high output version of the Hurricane engine, 540 horsepower. It's less expensive. So there is room on top of that, mm-hmm. if Ram wants to address that again. There's some industry questions about whether or not they have the manufacturing space to build the old supercharged engine. Yeah. So. We'll see what happens with that.
And eventually these Hemi V8s are going to probably, rumored, to trickle back into the cars.
Yes.
Because
those have not been selling either.
Correct.
The Charger is out.
Charger's out.
And there's the electric version of that. And yeah. I keep getting this wrong, but it's the Charger Daytona and Charger Daytona.
Four-door.
Yes.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and they're not selling.
No.
So they have this car that they could put.
Which is a beautiful car, I have to say. I drove the EV at the rally.
Did you?
It's great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It seems like it would be great. I need to get one on my schedule. They look good.
They look really good.
I've seen them on the road. They're great looking.
Yeah. Now you put a V8 Hemi in there, and it's going to be like waiting list time.
So we'll see what happens with that, too. But yeah, the electrification move there didn't pay off.
Yeah.
Electrification and efficiency move.
Because it's kind of oxymoronic. You want a muscle car that's an EV. You know, it kind of just, I don't know. didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I push back a little bit at the artificial noise that the EV...
That's a little juvenile, to be honest with you, but yeah. But you know what? It kind of makes sense when you drive it.
One of the things that Henry Ford did not do with the Model T was give it an option to make horse farting noises. And I think that and that's telling. He sold an awful lot of Model Ts, as I recall.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, God, Tom.
All right, so... Who knows? It might have been available. Wyrzowski's probably sold something like that for the Model T.
Probably.
All right. So the big news there is that the V8's available for 2026, but the 2026 models are coming out early.
Okay.
So get your money down now. Go call a dealer.
Go call a dealer. Get your name on the list.
And then the last question mark is what will those do with resale value? But I assume that because they're going to be popular, probably new, they'll be popular as used vehicles.
What's going to be the question is what's going to happen to the models today's models? You know, are they going to take a dive?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Will this hurt the hurricane engines?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, only time will tell.
Maybe not, but that's possible. All right. We got that out of the way there. You guys just drove. Great video. It's funny. The Rolls-Royce.
Ghost.
Ghost.
Yes.
Two.
Series two. Yes.
Series two.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even know what that means, but it's a series two.
So I just confused the Phantom and the Ghost, but the Ghost is the smaller of the two premium Rolls sedans.
I believe so, yes.
But by small, we're not talking about price. Tell us a little bit about the video and what you guys learned about.
Oh, yeah. So it was a lot of fun. First of all, it was raining miserably for like 2 days at the rally when we started driving it. So,
and that's the Midwest Automotive Media Association Spring Rally. Jill was there.
Yes. So we have like 80 cars. We got a bunch of journalists. And you literally just grab whatever car is free and put your cameras up and start driving. Like there's no anything. You just get in there and start driving and talking.
And cars do not spend much time parked.
No. In fact, you're running to grab it before other journalists do. It's kind of like a competition who's the fastest of the cars. But we got in the Ghost first. It was the first car we got into. And
so you guys were the one. You guys got into the...
Well, they knew it was raining because they took the lamb's wool carpeting that is usually in the front seats and they put it in the trunk. So not to get it wet.
That carpeting cost more than my first car.
It's ridiculous. Yes. I literally think that's like a $4,000 option or something like that. But the options list would just make your eyes water. It's like 390,000 starting or 350 starting. And with the options, we were at like 440,000, I think was the price.
So, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, our clients or our listeners would never buy a Rolls Royce, but it's just kind of like we wanted to see what the other half is, what the other half lives like.
More people, I think, in that price range buy them in the UK than they do here. But it's good that that's there. It's good that there's this benchmark there.
Yeah.
And that the people can decide whether or not, if they're in that price bracket, if they're in that income bracket, to maybe not do that.
But I will say, once you've driven that, you kind of get an idea of like what is the absolute maximum in luxury you could possibly be at. So when you do sit in a Lexus or you do sit in a Mercedes or something, you can kind of understand what they're missing. More so than you can if you've never driven a Rolls Royce.
You guys talked about this in the video, and it's something that I remember too. And I think it's key to the sense of luxury, and that's isolation. And that I remember Brendan was driving in your video, and he puts it in the drive, and there's really no sensation.
Oh, you don't even, it feels like an EV. Like you don't even hear the engine at all.
You know, at the extreme opposite end of that, I learned to drive in a 74 Plymouth Valiant.
Okay.
And if you put that in a drive, the whole car lurched forward.
And was shaking.
Loudly. And then it squeaked when you hit the brake to prevent it from lurching into the house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes. And it did squeak a lot.
The only way you knew the engine was running when you hit the gas in park and the car would just slightly like bend to the right, like the torque of the engine. That was the only way to know that the engine was actually on.
Those lazy engineers couldn't fix that.
But I will say that the car, it just, the sense of luxury is just off the charts. I mean, it's just incredible. And it's just so serene and quiet. In fact, I heard that they actually had to take some of the quietness out because it was driving people literally insane. So they actually had to bring some of the outside noise.
It's like a sensory deprivation.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly.
People
it was.
Can't do it.
Yeah, and like wait, you hear those stories like when they put people in those like sound rooms.
Yeah,
and like after like a few seconds, they can literally hear their own heartbeat and stuff. And they go crazy. They want to get out. This would have been kind of like that had they not kind of revised the interior and brought in a little bit of the outside noise inside. But it's still super quiet, super smooth. And when you go over bumps and stuff, it's just like, what was that? Like, you don't even feel it, you know? So, but it's not boaty. Like, it's hard.
Well, that's good.
It's hard to describe because usually when you want to make a suspension feel like nothing, you make it very soft and then it becomes this like boaty floaty thing.
Like a 76 Buick.
Yeah. This is not that at all. It's still a firm suspension. It's just that you don't feel you have the sensation come through the car, but you don't feel it. It's hard to describe.
That is the trick. And it got harder to do that in the last 20 years because wheel sizes grew and sidewalls on tires shrank.
Yeah.
And that sidewall used to be an awful lot of good news for engineers looking for ride quality because those tires would absorb a lot of stuff, but that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, because the sidewalls, like you said, are so thin now.
I read a thing about that car. Actually, I wrote about this a long, long time ago, but it was about the V12 engine, the 6.75
yes.
liter V12 engine, and it was designed to be long stroke, and so it came to torque a little bit more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for this is so that it would shift less. Like okay. If there was enough torque there, they could cut. There would be fewer shifts in driving yeah. around town.
But the shifts are extremely smooth. Like you barely feel
yeah,
them.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Here's a crazy thing about that transmission. That ZF based
yes.
transmission.
8-speed, yep.
Is in the Rolls-Royce Ghost 2, and it's in the Ram 1500.
Yeah, it's in a lot of cars. It's in my car.
It's been called by many people the greatest transmission ever built. Yeah.
Yeah. For automatics, yeah, for
yeah.
sure. It's a fantastic transmission. And the way Rolls-Royce / BMW engineered it is it just you don't even really feel it shifting.
That's cool. So can you guys drove this thing? Can you drive it like around town reasonably easily?
It's very easy to drive. And I have to say, when we goosed it a little bit, it's planted. There's no body roll. And it just hugs the road. It's actually because
that's crazy.
I was reading it's a 50-50 weight balance, which is sports car.
Yeah. You know, also seems unnecessary
yeah,
in this car.
But you know what? I guess I felt like if your chauffeur really wants to take it out, you know, he can enjoy himself. But it's really – it handles very well.
So you guys listen to some licensed music. So you
yeah. We had – yeah. Every time we play – like we turn off the radio, YouTube dings us on copyright infringement, and then we sit there and we have to like remove that part of the video.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they won't let us play it. So we basically now just when we listen to radio, we turn off the cameras and just listen to radio. And then we turn the cameras back on and talk about how the radio sounds.
Years ago, this is off track a little bit, but our friend Steve and Johnny were doing some video at a car show.
Mm-hmm.
Just a car show.
Yeah.
And in the background over loudspeakers, some music was playing.
Yeah.
They got dinged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So how was the stereo?
Stereo's amazing. I mean, $11,500, it better be good.
What brand is that now?
It's their bespoke radio, they call it.
So it's just the Rolls bespoke?
Yeah. There's no emblems or symbols or logos on the speakers. So we don't know who makes it for them. I mean, I guess you could Google it, but it sounds really good.
They used to have a company, and I wasn't familiar with it, but a super high-end audio company called Naim. NAIM, all lowercase.
Okay.
And that was the premium roll system for a while.
It might still be.
But it was very good. I remember hearing it in a little booth at the auto show. Like you'd go in there.
Oh, okay.
It was fantastic.
A little soundproof booth, yeah.
And I just like that there are cars with far better stereos than I have at home. But although I haven't used my home stereo in like 25 years, so I don't know what I'm talking about. So what was the craziest option on this thing besides the $12,000 stereo?
Picnic tables in the back with a TV screen.
Oh, did you use the umbrellas? Does it
yes,
have umbrellas?
Yes, we have the umbrellas. We use the umbrellas. I don't know if we used them in the Ghost video, but definitely because we also drove the Cullen, which is their SUV version.
Yeah.
We have that on video, and that's going to come out. That video
okay.
will come out soon. So if you don't catch the umbrellas in the Ghost video, you'll see them in the other one.
Gotcha.
But
all right.
But yeah, and then the picnic tables, and then of course that lamb's wool carpet was like $4,000, and I don't know. The option list was just nuts.
That's crazy, but cool car.
It's probably if you got the means, you definitely want that car.
Yeah, you can never justify paying close to $500,000 for a car. But if a car can make an impression, there will be an audience for it.
Or we always joke, you can sleep in your car, but you can't drive your house.
Right. Exactly. All right. After the quiz, we have to talk about your new podcast.
Sure.
But right now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we talk to Sam Fiorania of Auto Forecast Solutions. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
We Are Motor Driven is like your favorite garage conversation, just with mics. Honest car talk, wild opinions, and no gatekeeping. New episodes weekly, wherever you get your podcasts. Bring snacks and buckle up.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, and he is Paul Harrell. Paul is sitting in for Jill this week. Paul, how's it going?
Very well, Tom. Thank you.
Weird stuff, and weird stuff coming.
Yes.
This industry never slows down, it seems, and you think it might be, but these are weird days. And to help us make sense of weird days, on the phone, Sam Fiorania of Auto Forecast Solutions. Sam, how are you?
Doing very well. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, Paul.
I'm doing good.
We're good. Thanks for asking.
Good.
Now, you've got a lot of stuff going on. Also, again, you're like the most quoted human in the auto industry. It seems like every time I turn around, I'm reading a quote of yours in a different magazine. Clearly, people respect you, sir.
I hope so. I try my best. I try to give good information, and I'm friendly to other journalists. So that's part of the deal.
Also, people, if people want to know more about Chinese auto manufacturer BYD, they should listen to your conversation with friend of the show, Robert Colangelo, Green Sense Show. Just go to Green Sense Show. I think it's greensenseshow.com. But you guys had a great conversation about that, so I enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed talking to Robert about all things electric vehicles.
So real quick, remind us of what Auto Forecast Solutions is and what you do there, sir.
We provide data and analytics for the automotive industry. We do production and vehicle forecasting for about 60 countries around the world. We do a complete forecast every month from the ground up, every vehicle, every plant, and we provide a powertrain and powertrain forecast with it and software to deal with all the information.
Well, that's very cool. I appreciate your stuff. Sam, you've got some news of your own before we dig into the deeper stuff. The International Motor Press Association has an event coming up. Tell us about that and why it's a big deal to you.
Oh, we just had our spring break rally, a lot like the rally you guys were talking about. We had a number of IMPA members from all along the East Coast show up, and a number of great manufacturers, Ford, Stellantis, Toyota, Hyundai. We had Polaris show up this year.
Nice.
We had a great turnout of vehicles and people, and if other manufacturers want to join, they're missing out at the moment because we have some great journalists in the New York City area.
And you are the newly minted president of IMPA. Congratulations, sir.
Well, thank you very much. A proud addition to my resume.
Your lengthy and impressive resume. You also just did a story. I love that you did this because you the subjects that you cover for Collectible Automobile Magazine are fantastic because they are the vehicles no one remembers freely. And you just did a story for CA. Tell us about it.
Yes, I have written in the past about the Ford Granada and the 42 to 48 Lincoln, where the designer didn't even want to talk about them, things like that. But I've been trying to write about the Dodge Aries for the last quarter century for Collectible Automobile, and they finally asked me to do it.
Thank God.
It was an Aries and Plymouth Reliant.
I remember those vehicles fondly, and I was pumping gas at the time, so I saw them all over the place. And they sort of struck me as fake cars. They just seemed so small and light.
My first car was a Dodge Aries, 1982 Dodge Aries, 6-passenger, 4-speed manual,
Excellent.
No options.
Excellent.
I loved that car.
No air?
No air. No, I had cruise control. That was the only option on the car.
There's something about those cars, too, that a lot of people don't know. But for a little while, they never got the Dodge Aries and the Plymouth Reliant never got the turbocharged engine. Is that correct?
They never got the turbo. They had four lug wheels the whole length. They had they had every bare minimum piece you could put on that car.
That was the 2.2 liter, I think.
2.2 and later 2.5, I think. But they also had, correct me if I'm wrong, a Mitsubishi engine that they branded Hemi.
Yes. The 2.6 liter Hemi was later replaced by the 2.5. But yes, it had a Hemi badge on the side of it.
I want to own one of those badges, and I keep forgetting to scrounge on eBay for that.
I'll keep an eye out for you.
Yeah, do. I would pay, no, not good money, but I would pay money.
Some money.
So I would pay some money for a Hemi badge. All right, yeah, Sam.
Just like I'm looking for a 4-speed Aries to add to my collection.
There weren't a lot of those then.
There weren't. No, mine was completely bare bones. It had a metal dashboard and a plastic steering wheel.
Do you know who had exactly that vehicle? Ed Piotrowski, who was our guest last week, our co-host. Ed owned, his first car was an Aries, and I believe it was no air and a 4-speed manual. So 6-passenger.
Yeah, spectacular car. Yeah. It was a big flat bench seat, vinyl front and rear. You could slide around there. You needed the seatbelt just to keep you in place.
But you did get like 30 miles of the gallon, didn't you?
It got great gas mileage, and because it had no options, it actually had good acceleration.
Wow. All right. We got to talk business here too, Sam. I'm sorry.
Let's do that.
All right. A couple of big news stories in the last couple of weeks, but one of them is the surprise launch of a brand called Slate. And we talked a little bit about it on the show here, but Slate is in part a project headed by Jeff Bezos, or at least Jeff Bezos' investment firm, so it should be well funded. But it is a project to bring a $25,000 EV to market. And I think a lot of people have questions about this, but I think that the money is there, and that now this organization, which has been operating mostly in secret for a while now, has seen how, what not to do and what to do with an electric car company. But what do you make of Slate, and how viable do you think this company is?
We've been following the company for about 5 years.
Oh.
They were running under the radar for a long time and just showed their truck recently. The company is partially financed by Jeff Bezos' company, but the company was originally called Rebuild, and they have been looking to reshore production of product to the United States. This was 5 years ago.
Okay.
So the Slate vehicle is, like you said, a small two-door pickup truck, but it has accessories that you can make it your own. It plans not to have many options from the factory, but dealers and owners can make them personalized with new bodywork, with wraps instead of paint, and your cell phone is supposed to be your sound system. So it's very cheaply produced, but it's supposed to be an adequate vehicle for somebody looking for something under $30,000.
That is kind of crazy, but I love the minimalist attitude there. And I've heard, too, that it's got manual doors or manual windows. I'm sorry.
Yeah, manual windows and a small battery pack. And it's going to be very interesting because I don't think the young people today know how to use wind-up windows.
I was just going to say, are people going to know even how to open a window?
There's great videos
on
YouTube
of
kids being presented rotary telephones and being baffled.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny, too, because roll-up windows, like if I was to like tell someone at a distance to roll up their window, I might make the motion.
Yeah.
I'm not sure my daughter would know what that means.
The best is when you wanted to talk to somebody in the car next to you and you had to like lean over all the way to the passenger side and try to roll it down.
So how dependent do you think Slate is on the federal tax credit, which is obviously in some doubt right now?
I believe when they were pushing it, the $25,000 to $27,000 price they were talking about was before incentive. So even at $25,000, this is an inexpensive vehicle, definitely an inexpensive electric vehicle, and it would compete with the entry-level models in this marketplace. It would definitely fit right in there. But my problem is that it's a two-door, and you know, getting it to be the two-door SUV that they've shown would likely cost you a couple $1,000s more. So we're pushing the price back up to $30,000 for a two-door, where the competition are four-doors.
And historically, two-door crossovers, not popular
not
in this
popular,
market.
Correct.
No. You look at the Wrangler, and Wrangler sales took off when they added the back doors.
Yeah, and the Ford Explorer Sport, I remember that vehicle. I think I drove one, but they couldn't give those away. So what do you think about the viability here? Is there a market for this? Obviously, it's youth-oriented, right? We're talking minimalistic, so low frills, but high affordability. Can this work?
It has the potential to work. The market hasn't shown a real excitement for electric vehicles. When you look at some of the electric vehicles that are on the market in the $30,000 to $40,000 range, and there are a couple of them, they're not lighting the sales charts on fire. So expecting a bunch of people to be waiting for that sub $30,000 vehicle might be questionable. I'm not sure that there's that big of a market out there for these people, for these vehicles.
The interesting thing here that might work, correct me if I'm wrong, is that these are going to look really cool. And if you go to the Slate website, and you should, really cool things that you can do with it in terms of wraps, body types, and wheels, tires, stuff like that. So I think the key to this succeeding might be youth appeal and reaching out to youth that don't care whether or not it's electric, but care that it's a cool, affordable vehicle.
As long as it has room to throw in your mountain bike, your snowboard, whatever you're using to go out to the mountains, to the trek, to the field, you know, whatever you're doing, going outdoors, as long as you can throw out stuff in the back and take a friend along, it should work. But it's just a good used vehicle at the same price would be a lot bigger, and you know the brand,
and a lot more options too.
Yeah,
if you get a used one, so.
Absolutely.
All right. Real quick, I should have known this, and I don't know this. What does the distribution channel look like? Are they going to go through traditional dealers?
There's a lot to be built up on this company. We don't know the distribution channels yet, but it's supposed to go into production next year, so we should be hearing something very shortly.
Well, since it is backed by Jeff Bezos, you think you can just order one on Amazon?
Maybe. And young buyers
are
more comfortable with it.
They did test that with Hyundai recently, so that is a possibility.
All right. I'm going to change gears on you, Sam. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. We know that Tesla's having some rough times right now, but they've got a project coming out this week. I think we're going to hear more about it. But that's the Cybercab. And I don't know if a lot of people know about the Cybercab, but investors seem to think that this is the future of the company, or at least a stopgap future of the company. Tell us about the Cybercab and what you think it might be.
When they introduced it a few months ago and they showed us the two-door... steering wheel lift car, this is supposed to be a fully autonomous vehicle. And the idea of getting these into consumer hands kind of confuses me because, you know, who wants to trust a robot to take you wherever you're going?
Right.
There are a lot of regulations on the books that prevent this from being sold in wide numbers. We have a lot of issue, the idea of the vehicle, and getting to the volume that Tesla wants to get seems almost impossible.
Now, Tesla is, I think there's, tell me if I'm wrong, but I think there's two business models here. One of them is to build these things and sell these things, and they're kind of good looking, even though they don't have things like a steering wheel. And the other is to actually develop their own driverless ride hailing service, I believe, that they intend to actually manage and profit from.
Yeah, the company itself has pushed the idea that you as an owner can profit from it.
Okay.
By renting it out. It's a great concept, but we've had trouble with subscription-based anything in the automotive field, like renting out your car and doing it without an intermediary, without having a Turo or somebody else making the deal for you and going through Tesla, likely.
So this gets weird, too, because let's look at Waymo, and Waymo does ride hailing, and then they developed a car briefly that they gave up on. I think it was called the Firefly or something like that. But they've been around for a very long time, and they're still developing their autonomous vehicles, and I think they're in 4 cities right now, and all those cities are cities where it doesn't rain much and there's no fog. So that gives you an idea of just how far along they think they are. Tesla's got to be further back no matter what on this, and they've had some trouble where they had to back off even calling things autopilot or full self-driving. It doesn't seem likely to me that anytime in the near future they're going to be selling a fully autonomous vehicle.
of a fully autonomous vehicle. Even the Waymo vehicles have steering wheels and people monitoring them.
Yeah.
But the idea of having a fully autonomous vehicle with no steering wheel and safely taking you wherever you want to go is still out in the future. I tell people all the time that when you're driving your car, take note of all the decisions you make while you're driving. You're looking at a car that's potentially going to come into your lane. You look at cross traffic, people walking out, toys rolling into the street, all kinds of things that you notice because you have 5, 10, 15, 20 years of experience driving, and we have to teach cars how to do this. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of data that has to be processed, and they have millions of miles of autonomous vehicles or semi-autonomous vehicles out there and data that they've learned from that, but there's always something more, and I think the idea of an autonomous vehicle will potentially be safer than a human being, at least the human beings I've seen driving my streets.
Sure.
But getting this robot to do this on its own all the time, and like you said, in different weather conditions, different street conditions, there's a lot to get through before I think anyone should be able to trust them everywhere all the time.
Yeah, but Sam, just a quick question. Do you think that AI is going to really speed all this up now? Because if you have a learning machine that can take experience and learn from it, then that curve of learning basically gets really reduced.
The idea of AI learning the roads, especially live while it's driving, is a great idea. But again, it has to learn them and it has to be able to react to them. And then it has to have a conscience. It has to decide there are two different people I'm going to hit. Which one should I hit? In case,
right.
The old adage where of somebody crossing the street and an elderly person off to the side, where do you draw the line? It's a lot of things that have to go in there that are not automatically yes or no.
And that's tough stuff. Real quick, back to Waymo for a second. The Waymo business model is similar, right? Waymo wants to actually operate for a profit these ride-hailing services, but they also want to license this technology eventually to other automakers, correct?
As a service, this is a great idea that they could sell the service for semi-autonomous driving or fully autonomous driving eventually. This technology is in every modern car now, and it's just going to get more. So finding more suppliers like Waymo to provide that kind of data, that kind of software, hardware is going to be very important going forward. And it just adds another supplier to the supply chain.
What did you make of General Motors backing away from this with the demise of Cruise?
The idea of that they had learned quite a bit from Cruise that helped them build their Super Cruise. They have gained a lot from their association.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they saw that the idea of making money off of autonomous vehicles is out in the future, and it wasn't close enough for them to keep investing and get there. Eventually, they'll be able to buy the technology from Waymo, from a company like Waymo.
I've used Super Cruise in a couple of different vehicles, and it's very impressive for people that don't know. Semi-autonomous hands-free driving, only on mapped roads. Mm-hmm. So mostly interstates and state routes, things like that.
Oh, but it works well. It's a great system, yeah.
Yeah, and it lets you know in enough time to put your hands on the wheel. It's not frightening at all.
But it's very relaxing because you can take those long trips and arrive refreshed.
I have a test road that will freak out most of those semi-autonomous driving ones. And the better they get, each progressive car seems to get better and better at that road. And so I've been very impressed by the latest ones.
Sam, we've run out of time, but before you go, do tell us about the what's going on at the Boyertown Museum of Historic Vehicles.
Boyertown Museum is celebrating its 60th anniversary this year.
Congratulations.
And we're going to have a grand reopening in September. So if you're around, please check us out and look at the Boyertown Museum of Historic Vehicles in Boyertown, Pennsylvania.
All right. And remind us how to get a hold of more information about Auto Forecast Solutions.
We're on all the things, as Jill would say.
All the things.
We're at autoforecastsolutions.com, and look us up if you're in the industry.
All right. Sam, thank you so much for your time today.
Great to be here.
All right. That was Sam Fiorani with Auto Forecast Solutions. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of the Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit GreenSenseShow.com or listen to the Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, and sitting in the Jill seat, Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed.
Hello, Tom.
It's quiz time, but first tell us about the Sons of Speed and how we can get there.
You can reach us at wearemotordriven.com, and that will kind of take you to all of our social media stuff.
Right. And you guys have a new podcast. I'm teasing that now.
Yes,
we're going to talk about it after the quiz.
The We Are Motor Driven podcast.
Yeah, I listened to the first episode. I'm busy, but it was good. It was really good.
Thank you.
What's nice is everyone you've got involved is smart, articulate, and high energy.
Yeah.
It was a good listen.
Yeah.
And a fast hour.
It goes by pretty quickly, I have to say myself, so.
All right, it's quiz time. You were just complaining off air that I give Jill easy quizzes.
Yeah, and then you wait for the hard one.
Yeah, this one might be hard.
Yeah, thank you.
This one's called Dead or Alive for 25. Okay. I'm just going to give you a car, and you have to tell me if it's still available in 2025.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
The Ford Edge. So it'd be Ford's two-row mid-size
crossover.
I
know they're going to cancel it. I don't know if it's available in 25. It will, for sure not in 26, but... Oh, God. I'm going to say it's not available now. All right,
correct.
For 25. Okay.
Correct. You're on the board.
Oh, wow.
All right. No shutout.
You seem disappointed, one. Tom.
I thought this might be harder. The Jaguar F-Type. Which, by the way...
Oh, that's gone.
Oldest sin, but still delightful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's... No.
It is gone.
Okay.
Right, you've almost won. The rules are there's five questions. You have to get three.
Okay.
That's it, including the bonus question.
And now you jinxed it.
The bonus question always related to the topic of the day. All right. Here's a good one because it involves manual transmissions. The Nissan Versa. This is Nissan's small, affordable, likable.
It's the one that I kind of, when I drove it, had the CVT, and I kind of dinged it a lot, and Nissan refused to give me any other cars after that. Let me see. I think that's still available this year.
It is, but not with a manual.
Oh, okay.
So I checked on this. The manual was dropped for this year. It does go away next year, or it's supposed to go away next year, largely because it's built in Mexico.
Okay.
So it's one of these very, very low-margin cars. And if you're looking for a car for around 20 grand, check out the Versa.
Oh, yeah. It's a feature pack, too.
A lot of the electronic stuff. The manual take rate in 2024 was 5%.
24.
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden, I'm drunk. I don't know why just now, but the manual take rate was 5%.
Oh, wow.
So probably higher than a lot of vehicles, but yeah. Didn't production? Oh, here it is. Production ends in June. All right. Wait, you got that one, didn't you?
Well, I didn't get... I don't know how you're classifying it. Okay, because I didn't get the manual. The manual's gone.
Yeah, that wasn't
the
really the question.
Not,
yeah.
I don't know.
I'm saying you won.
Okay.
All right. The Nissan, 1, 2, 3. Oh, well, I only did 4. I didn't come up with I did. I've skipped it.
Okay.
We're good.
All right.
Wow, am I disorganized today. The Nissan Maxima.
Oh, that's gone.
Yeah. Died after 2023. Speaking of manuals, my 1999 Nissan Maxima, 5-speed manual.
Oh, okay.
Delightful car.
Oh, yeah.
Delightful car.
I remember when they went with that 4-door sports car moniker,
mm-hmm.
they were some great cars. They really were.
Yeah, the 99 SE, kind of sporty, good brakes. Everything about it was pretty cool. Steering was way too light, and I wasn't able to fix that with tires. I spent a lot of money on Yokohamas.
Oh, really?
Tried to get some stickiness up front, but it didn't happen. Good grip, though, in the lateral. All right, finally, the Chevrolet Blazer. And there's a story here.
Okay. I know it was never a big success, like when it came out recently, the new design, it was.
Which is
not,
I thought it was good looking.
Yeah, I thought it was good looking too. I just think it was either too expensive for what you got or there's something wrong with it that it just was not a sales success. But I think that they're still making that.
They are.
Okay.
And they were supposed to kill it for 2026, but the last word I heard is they're going to continue making it.
Okay.
Another vehicle, not great sales from Mexico, so it seemed like if the tariffs were going to go on, maybe they'd kill it, but they've committed to 2026. That's where they built the Ramos Arizpe, Mexico, where they built the Equinox, the Blazer, and the Cadillac Optic.
Oh, it's built there. Okay.
Yeah, all coming there. So you got all five, didn't you?
Yes.
All right. So much for this being hard. All right, are you ready for the bonus question?
As always.
Do you know what distillery in the U.S. opened in 1886? That's not the question.
No, I do not.
Jack Daniels.
Okay.
Jack Daniels.
You know what? If I had to name a name, that would be the one I was going to give.
America's favorite call brown booze, Jack Daniels. I was at the website today where I had to enter my age. They don't check very hard, so.
Okay. So it was on the phone? Because then you had to, like, do that wheel? And you were probably spinning for a long time.
Thank you. Yes. Seemingly forever. Anyway, one of the things about Jack Daniels, classy outfit. They do like their Gentleman Jack, which is supposed to be like pricey, you know, high-end stuff. But they also do whiskey flavors, which makes me think of spring break. Spring break in Fort Lauderdale. But we're going to be talking about Jack Daniels whiskey flavors today. I hope you're ready because the youngsters know these. Which of the following is not actually a Jack Daniels product? Are you ready?
Okay.
Jack Daniels Tennessee Honey, Tennessee Fire, Tennessee Plum, or Tennessee Apple? All of these make me think about puking.
Yeah. I think the fire I could see because, like, they probably want to have one that's kind of more spicy.
Right.
You know, so that I could actually see as them having.
All right.
It was plum, apple, and honey.
And yeah.
Okay.
Honey sounds dreadful.
Yeah.
Not that apple sounds
good. Yeah, I'm going to go with the apple.
Is the fake?
Yeah.
That's real.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, the fake is the plum.
Ah.
All right. So there you have it. You won. I'll sign this over to you real quick. And there you go.
Thank you.
Oh, there's something I wanted to talk about, and I forgot what it was already. Did I write it down? No. All right. But we were going to talk about your new podcast.
Yes. It's wearemotordriven.com, available on all your podcast companies.
And this brings together all the elements of We Are Motor Driven.
Yes. So we have Jennifer and Harvey, along with myself and Brendan.
So Harvey is with Rides and Drives.
Rides and Drives, yes.
And Jennifer is with?
Auto Exotica.
Auto Exotica. Yeah. Okay.
So just Harvey and Jennifer, just titans of the automotive industry. Like, they just know everything about it. And Harvey, being that he has a marketing background in the automotive industry, he just brings in so much knowledge. And Jennifer's owned just about every car that has ever been built, so she brings all that knowledge with her, and she's just so great with the details. So it's just the four of us talking. We're not bringing like current events or news articles. We're just talking about general automotive subjects, and it's just a lot of fun,
which is probably refreshing.
Yeah. So, well, it's kind of timeless because
not hard news breakers like we are here at the Car Stuff Podcast.
Exactly. But what's nice is if you listen to our podcast 6 months from now, you're not going to get outdated information because we're not giving you that stuff.
That's true. So. You know, that's funny that you would mention that. I was looking today at our most popular and least popular episodes at the Car Stuff Podcast, and it's just scrolling through. And our first episodes, predictably dismal.
Okay. I mean,
going back 5 years, just not a lot of listening. And I don't know why you would go back and listen to those now. I mean, why would you? We were covering news, and a lot of that news is old.
Yeah.
So what's strange is every year I do a Consumer Guide Best Buy episode.
Yeah, you just did one recently with Brendan,
Those are super popular, even the old ones.
Okay.
So that's interesting to me.
Well, because if people are looking for a used car,
must be.
They can go back to that 2022 and see if you had it on their list.
So tell us topics you guys have covered so far.
So we did car design, and then Brendan's favorite, manual versus automatic. you could not get him to shut up on that episode. And then our recent one is coming out tonight. And to be honest with you, I don't know which one that's going to be yet.
The manual automatic thing, I always seem ambivalent, and I'm not. I mean, I drove stick every car I owned until Well, every car I ever owned.
Okay.
My wife's cars, she's had some automatics, but even she was driving stick. And I love driving stick.
Oh, no, it's great.
And it just, it's not going to happen going further.
Correct, yeah.
And the question is how long it will last in certain cars. And
yeah.
Porsche just killed the Boxster and the Cayman. Those
yes.
are going away sometimes.
They're going EVs, I guess.
And I think the take rate on automatics or manuals on those was probably pretty high.
Yeah.
Because those cars... Sadly, I don't fit in them very well,
mm-hmm.
but they were absolute joy to drive. I mean, they were
absolutely. And so ironic is when Porsche does come out with a like manual version of like a 911, it sells out immediately. Like everyone just jumps at it. But so I mean, there is obviously a market for certain cars for a manual. Absolutely. You know, do you want to have a pickup truck with a manual? Probably not. Except if you're Brendan, but, you know, so it depends on the type of car and also, you know, what you buy a car for. You know, if it's your Sunday or your weekend, enjoy the drive type of car, absolutely you want to get a manual because there's no better way to enjoy a car than to shift your own gears and be really become like
one
with the machine.
There's a level of engagement there. And I once wrote about this. I owned a Jeep CJ7. It's 1977 CJ7 with the 304 V8.
Okay.
Four barrel, I think. And it was a spin happy engine, not a lot of power, not even a great deal of torque, but it was a joy to drive with stick.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just fun. And the shifter was just so mechanical.
Yeah.
And a little bit recalcitrant. It wasn't sloppy. You know, it was just a little bit hard to shift. And you got the best noise from it. It just snicked. And like,
yeah, I love that snick stick sound.
Great. It was just super satisfying to drive. And I've talked about my Scirocco, and I was just talking about my Maxima.
Yeah.
My 99 Nissan Maxima. That was a great stick shift.
Mm-hmm.
And that engine loved to rev. But sadly, those days are gone. And my daughter's still, I think, in therapy because we tried to teach her stick. My wife had a Jetta turbo diesel. And that was a great car, the wagon. And the problem was that even though diesels develop a lot of torque down low, there's a few hundred RPM where there's no torque at all.
Yeah.
So you do have to work the throttle and the clutch.
And
the
clutch,
same
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that never really happened.
Well, I was joking on the first podcast that we did that the first time I ever drove a manual was a Volkswagen Rabbit, and it was a 4-speed. And literally my father was like, oh, we'll go to school. Right. So I'm going to drive to school. And he says, OK, you want to balance the clutch and the gas. Go. That's all he taught me.
What year Rabbit was it?
It was a 1980, I think. Yeah.
So what a classic great German car.
Yeah.
4-speed manual, 1.5 liter, I think. Probably fuel injected by then.
Yes, it was fuel injected. It was a 4-door, had a manual sunroof.
Wow.
With a crank.
Yeah, that weighed all of like 2,100 pounds.
Yeah.
That's one of those crazy times where that car with its tiny engine was actually quicker than a lot of the old American V8 iron on the road.
It was. It was pretty peppy, actually.
Probably did 16 about 10 seconds,
yeah.
9 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was no RPM gauge. You had like the little blue dots at the speed and the speedometer.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So. I love the shift points. I had an 84 Sunbird with the OHC FI engine, Brazilian built 1.8 single overhead cam, 2-valve. That was supposed to be smooth and European. It sucked.
Like, yeah.
It made so much noise. But I didn't have a tach, but it absolutely made enough noise to let you know when to shift. And there was an upshift light. But not when you were driving hard. It was just to remind you to go up a gear to save gas.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the overdrive on that was so ridiculously highly geared that it wouldn't hold that speed.
Like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's actually kind of a terrible car. So,
but our third podcast was all about car design. And we actually got...
I need to hear this.
Yeah, it's an amazing episode. We have one of the workers from Pininfarina, actually, from Italy. So he's got the beautiful Italian accent.
Pronounce that again.
Pininfarina?
I've been saying that wrong for 50 years.
Okay. Well, my mom was from Italy, so I learned Italian. But anyway, we have him on the show, and he is just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Just the amount of knowledge and background he has is just incredible.
So Pinin, I'm not going to say the whole thing, but those guys, bunch of Ferraris.
Yes.
What other cars have they done?
Well, Bertone was Lamborghini. So, but Pininfarina, you know, they've done everything, even, I believe
Did I say Lamborghini or Ferrari?
No, Ferrari. Yeah, they up until recently they were doing all the Ferraris.
Yeah,
I think I could be wrong. The 458 was their last design of Ferrari.
Great looking car.
Yeah. And then after that, I think Ferrari was doing it all in house. But I mean, they just have like they did Range Rover. You know, like they do, and that's if you ever wonder why. A lot of the Range Rover models, not all of them, but some of them, like the Range Rover Sport and stuff, look so amazing, even though it's just a box.
Yeah.
It's because Pininfarina really know what they're doing.
I have asked myself that question. It's like, why is this so great looking?
Yeah.
It seems so simple.
Yeah.
It seems like a bunch of straight edges.
No, but they.
But it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's a fabulous looking car or SUV.
Oh, man. So how can people listen to the podcast?
We're on everything, Spotify, all the podcast downloads. Companies.
Well, you guys did that fast. Sometimes it takes a while with a new podcast to get the...
Yeah, we really hit the ground running.
Well, that's good.
But, and also there's...
Are you on Apple already too?
Yes, we're on Apple.
That took me forever.
And also we are, if you want to, we don't have any video yet. We're going to start videoing mm-hmm. ourselves doing a podcast, probably in a few more episodes. But we're also on YouTube if you want to just hear the audio of it.
Well, cool.
Yep.
Paul, thanks for filling in this week.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. This has been the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Thanks to Sam Fiorani of Auto Forecast Solutions. Thank you, Paul. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. We'll talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.